What's up, y'all? This is Tony Powell, and you're listening to Powell to the People, the podcast, episode 274. Once again, I'm joined by the finest cast in all of podcasting. When I want to know what's going on with the New York City transit scene, there is absolutely no expert I have more faith in than my cousin, Mr. Keith Powell. What's going on, Keith?
Man, I am good, and it's great to be here with my family once again.
And when I want to talk local TV news, there is absolutely no one I have more faith or confidence in than my favorite director, who happens to be my favorite brother, Mr. Mark Powell's in the house. What's going on, Mark?
What's up, fam? What's up, world?
And when I want to talk local New York City real estate, or when I'm looking for a place to go Easter Sunday to get the word, there is nobody I have more faith in than the man they call Bishop Eddie Kane Jr., the Reverend Dr. Derek Powell's in the house. What's going on, DP?
Everything is good. Always good to be in the cipher. And on behalf of my colleagues in Easter, in the words of the Pharaoh, let my people go! It's supposed to be a goddamn holiday.
So we were talking off the air. Keith was mentioning the Ten Commandments, and I'm gonna show you how I weave all these things together. I was reading about generations, like, you know, the different generations that we're in, the generational spaces that we occupy, the generational spaces that our kids occupy. And for the longest time, I thought, given my birthday, I was a boomer. But I learned that I am not a boomer. But I'm also not Mark's generation, which is Gen X. I'm in a strange spot. That means you, Keith, Derek, and I are not boomers, and we're not Gen X.
What are we?
Ah, I'm glad you asked.
Mistakes.
We are Generation Jones.
Jones?
Generation Jones, or what they call Boomer 2. Generation Jones. Generation Jones is anyone born from 1955 to 1964. So current Generation Jones members are ages 60 to 69. So we are Generation Jones. We're not boomers, and we're not Gen X. Mark happens to be Gen X because Gen X happens after 64. So, yeah, Generation Jones. Did you know that?
I had no clue.
Okay, question. Who the hell is Joneses?
Well, that's like Keeping Up with the Joneses. It's either called, if you Google Generation Jones, or if you call Google Generation Boomer 2, Baby Boomer 2, that's where we fall. Generation Boomer 2 and Generation Jones are the same thing. But as people who are we're not boomers. We don't identify as boomers. We don't have the same experience as people born after the war, and we don't have the same experiences as people who were born during the war. Our parents were war generation people. I forget what that generation is, but they were born during the war, so they're not boomers. Boomers happened after the war, so that 45, 46 or whatever to where we start, 46 to say 55, is the boomer generation. 45 to 55 is the boomer generation. We're not. We're Generation Jones. And it got me to thinking. I said, Generation Jones is a wildly unique generation in terms of the things that we have seen, that we have lived through. We have lived through the assassination of an American president. We've lived through the moon landing. We've lived through World Trade Center. We've lived through the funky, the happening 60s and the 70s. And we experienced the go-go 80s. We have experienced it all. I mean, we've come of age among these dramatically different decades. I mean, from the 60s to the 90s, is 30 years, but the changes in those 30 years was outrageous. We've lived through a pandemic, so it's really, really unique. And I thought that the only people that would have a more unique generational change or shift might be someone who was born, say, 10 years ago. If you were born in 2014 and suddenly, you're 10 years old today, think about what you've already experienced. You've experienced your first years of school online. You've watched an insurrection a storming of the Capitol. You have seen the election of the first game show president. You've watched the first president to ever be impeached twice. You're going to be living through the era of artificial intelligence. You are going to grow up with social media being the new version of your television.
Being media.
Right, being media, yeah. Right. So that generation is going to experience, you're going to live through the first home-friendly robots. They're going to grow up living, I guess, a Jetsons type of life where they'll actually have robots being their assistants or robots doing stuff. They'll have machines that will be cooking their food, that will be taking care of the mundane tasks. They may not have to go to work 5 days a week because there will be probably at some point machines replacing the lion's share of the work that they might do. So this generation, these babies, these 10-year-olds, your granddaughter, Keith, will experience a world that will be so foreign to us that if we could come back and see them at our age, we wouldn't recognize what we're looking at.
I still think, though, you guys, you know, because I'm in the right generation, but you guys still have experienced the biggest swath of change. I mean, Anthony, big time Trekkie guy, and as a kid, I had the toy I guess that phone, that Comlink phone or whatever, you know, basically the computer in his hand is our reality. I mean, you guys have gone from
the tricorder, you mean?
Yeah. You've gone from, you know, black and white tube TVs to screens that are, in some cases, 3 inches thick and all these, you know, only thing you don't have that the future promised you when you guys are watching TV is the flying car, the Jetson car. They do have drones that are drone taxis that they're testing out, but you don't have your own self-flying car. Everything else that you saw as a possible TV or movie, for the most part, has come to pass in some big ways or some small ways. So you guys, I know we just said the 2014 generation is going to see some things, but you guys have seen a lot in 60 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, if you mentioned Star Trek, I thought about that too. I said, you know, TV reflects what society is going through. So for us, as Generation Jones, we grew up at a time when, think about this, there was a nostalgia for World War II. Some of the top sitcoms, McHale's Navy,
mm-hmm.
Hogan's Heroes,
some of the top
dramas, The Rat Patrol, were all these shows based on the antics that happened or the things that happened during World War II.
And MASH, remember MASH?
MASH, yeah, it was with Korean War, right? So right. This is stuff we grew up on. So this is what, remember, the writers
got awards.
Who were writing those shows were the boomers. They were the ones who grew up after the war or grew up during the war. And so when they finally got to be in a position of power to write and create these shows, that's what they remembered. But then you have, to your point about Star Trek, and Gene Roddenberry, who was talking about the current situation, the turbulent 60s, where you had racial conflict and you had societal conflict. And so all of those Star Trek episodes were dealing with some element of society at the time. You had this diverse cast on the Enterprise. You had an Asian weapons officer. You had a Russian who was the navigator. You had some alien on board that was the science officer. You had a black communications officer. So you had all of that diversity. And the big enemy was this dark empire that the Federation was against, was like Russia, was the Klingons. They were the oppressive empire. So that's what people were seeing. That's what they were imagining. That's where their imaginations took them. So yeah, it is interesting when you just look at what they were selling us. Remember, we grew up watching the Vietnam War on TV, and what were the toy manufacturers selling us?
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe. They were selling us. They were selling us a dream. They were trying to get us ready. They were selling us, you know, automatic you know, cap guns and electronic sounding machine guns and selling us this G.I. Joe dude with a clear and obvious scar all up on his cheek. Now, I'm just, oh, yeah, this is great, you know. Right. So they were preparing, you know, legs that would come off if you pulled them hard enough. So they were definitely preparing us for whatever was coming down the pike, you know. So, yeah, it is. It's interesting when you start to look back at the generational differences and how we were raised. And, you know, on TikTok, they always talk about, like, Gen X and I guess now Generation Jones as being that last feral, wild generation that kind of raised themselves. We all were like latchkey kids, mm-hmm. you know. Most of us learned how to make our own meals by the time yep. we were like 11 or 12.
Absolutely.
You know, we would go outside and the only guide we had was the streetlights to tell us what time to come, you know, time to come home.
Yeah. And you know what? None of us was getting kidnapped and we was by ourselves all the time. And then you think about it as we got, you know, a little older and you like, the milk cartons, you're like, y'all can't go to school. I remember at nine, right. I had a sneaker shoelace around my neck with the key. And Keith got in maybe about 10 minutes after me, and I had to go across Clausen Avenue, you know, to the building up 13 stories, you know, and not one time did my parents think that somebody gonna take me. And never got, that's why I'm like, God damn, man, that was crazy.
This is true. Like,
when did your kids get keys?
I don't know if they still got one. <You know? laughs> Trying to think that he may have, but he can't find it.
Because Nia didn't get a key to maybe like 14.
Okay.
And I had mine at 9. At 9, I'm coming, doing what I need to do, hands down, never afraid, up the stairs. And that's just what it was.
I used to walk to PS 221 on Empire Boulevard from Crown Street. And I guess we lived right on the corner of Crown and Troy Avenue in Brooklyn. And
that's a walk.
Yeah, it's about 4 blocks. It's 4 blocks and a half a block up Empire Boulevard.
Now, did you have to cross Empire or?
I had to cross all them streets. I had to cross, you know.
Empire?
Crown. You had to cross, I had to cross.
That's a big street.
Montgomery. I had to cross, I forget what the next street was. Right.
Is that so worse than the conduit, Anthony? Or is it, I don't know.
And then when I went to,
that was
when we moved.
Bowfinger.
I was in the fifth grade. So whatever that is, I'm 10 years old. I have to cross the Conduit Boulevard to go to PS 214.
And you know what's crazy? Either way you would have went, it was either Linden Boulevard or the Conduit. And both of them, y'all was right in the middle. You was jammed up either way, man.
No, you couldn't fall. You couldn't stumble. You're like, we're waiting for a light, just be there all day. Listen, when this car goes, we go. That's the crew.
And Mark, you had to cross the conduit too?
Because he went to 159,
Think about this. I'm 6 years younger than Anthony. So we would go across the conduit to take the train to go into Manhattan. My quote-unquote big brother, who's all of 14, 15 years old.
Now, I wasn't even that old when you think about it, because if you're 6, I mean, I'm 12, taking you, and I'm 11. He's 5, 4 and 5. I'm 11 years old riding the subway with my 5-year-old brother to go uptown.
Yeah, it wasn't a stop. We were going to Manhattan.
Wow.
Well, Dirk, you remember mommy at work? On 34th Street,
sure.
We had to take the train.
Also, why do that to
come
us?
To your house, you either took the 10 bus or we took the train to Grand Avenue.
And then we had to cross
Atlantic Avenue, which was no picnic there.
What kind of parents we had? And not once did they ever think something would happen and you wouldn't come back. That's what's scary.
Right. Only thing they used to say, call me when you get there.
And God forbid you couldn't find your key. Oh, man. Oh, goddamn. Oh, hell break loose now, man. Forget about your safety. Where's your key?
We had to sit out in front of the door on 13th floor.
You ain't getting no key. Shoot, wait till I get there.
That's it. And I think about giving you a key, man.
Exactly.
So many keys because, you know, the initial thing was, here's a key. Then I got the one where I had the string on the neck, but then that was for all of us played along. I had one that tied to my belt. I mean, I just constantly kept losing keys. Right. What happened?
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so this is a generation that like I said, this is the wild.
Yeah.
We're like the feral. We're like animals. Like we're, you know, like once, remember, like you ever watch those nature shows? Like, you know, the lion, you know, lioness leaves the den. They leave the cubs up to their own devices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she come mm-hmm. back, and if all the cubs is there, it was a good day. If they miss it a couple, she's like, ah, well, you know, happens.
That's life.
Keep it moving. You know, that's the way it is in the wild. So that's exactly what we were like, feral kids. We were feral. Mm-hmm. We were wild animals. We drank from garden hoses.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. The fire hydrant, if it was open. You know, now these kids got peanut allergies. You
know? Think about it. You know, the things that we did as kids, the food we ate, how we ate our food, water we drank, ain't never got sick.
Milk. They lactose intolerant. What you gonna put on your cereal, man, on Saturday mornings, man?
Oh, they don't eat cereal. They eat cereal dry. I don't know about.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my son eats dry cereal. He would rather eat the cereal from a bowl and drink milk from a glass, as opposed to like
putting it together,
mixing them bad boys together.
Oh, okay, that's a little different there.
Yeah, no.
I thought he just didn't use the milk at all.
No, he likes the idea of just, I mean, but I see that, you know, but that's a lot of these kids though. A lot of them, you see them, they'll get like like a box of Cheerios or something like that. And they ain't even thinking about no milk.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just like straight from the box.
Wow.
Like, what are y'all doing? Mm-hmm. You know, so they don't, you know, they don't get that pink, you know, taste the rainbow flavored milk, you know, they don't get that one. Chocolate milk or whatever your apple cereal tastes like. They apple don't get that. Yeah. Yeah, apple jacks, apple cinnamon flavored milk.
Yeah,
they don't get that. They're different. So, yeah, it is it's really wild when you just think about the expectations we have of them versus, you know, what we have. I mean, like as you said, you just described it. You didn't the idea of you giving your daughter a key to the house.
Yeah,
before 14. She was 14, was like, yeah. You know, it's a big step.
Major.
But she had a phone before she was 14, I bet.
I'm trying, maybe around the same time.
Okay.
But I was like, if you get locked out, you definitely locked out. Ain't no buses up here, so you kind of jammed up. So she didn't need a phone. So was kind of pressured into that. But yeah. She got in, 14, right? She was in high school. Mm-hmm. And then public school, fourth grade, I was letting myself in and out. Sure.
Yeah, no, you let yourself in and out. You know, again, your summers were spent
outside.
Outside. I mean, you know, if your parents was home, they were like, well, you can't be here all day. No, go outside and do something. No,
they used to ask you, what time you going out? You going? Yeah. Your friends outside already? Go get out. Now, these kids don't even want to go outside.
They don't want to leave the door. They don't want to leave the environment. They don't want to leave the crib. They don't want to walk outside. They want to be outside. Mm-hmm. It's too hot. They tell you it's too hot.
Yeah, what? I remember when I was driving the bus and the grandmother had the two kids, a boy and a girl. And she said, when y'all get home, y'all going to go outside. And they going, why? She said, because I said so. I'm tired of y'all in the house with the damn computers and stuff. The kids do not want to go outside. They prefer to stay in the house, video games, or they're on social media. And that's how they live their life. They don't experience the things we experience, the games that we made up games when we went outside. Sure.
You know, all day, every day.
You put them, they'd be like, no, I don't do that. You'd be looking at it, what do you mean you don't do that? You ever play punch ball? No, what's that? Slap ball? Mm-hmm. What's that? Coca Olivia, team tag? They know nothing about that. No fun. Mm. Well, Anthony didn't play the game of, can we get across Linden Boulevard in one piece? Let's get the car. Let's dodge the
car. That was something else, man.
Not only that, but you got to realize back in the day when I lived in East New York, Brooklyn is what we're talking about. Linda Plaza, East New York, Brooklyn. Where I went to elementary school was in at the time a very working class Italian Irish neighborhood. So they allowed us to come to school during school hours. But if we were over there after school hours, they would throw you out the park. Because I remember one time we were over there playing basketball in the park, and all of a sudden, like on the side of the park, on one of the side streets, two Cadillacs just pull up and stop. Now, we just literally just two kids playing basketball. And, you know, full court, because you can run full court there. We're playing basketball. Two cars pull up. Bunch of dudes, like one of those scenes from Goodfellas or Bronx Tale. Bunch of guys jump out of the cars with baseball bats the whole nine yards.
You little kids.
Exactly. That didn't matter. Damn. So we sprinting across, you know, Condor Boulevard back to our side of the boulevard. I mean, it was insane, but that's exactly what it was. So, yeah, again, it's funny that I sit around and I'm concerned about the time and everything else. We've become so to your point that we worry about kidnapping, we worry about, you know, molestation, we worry about all these things. And I'm not so sure. I guess maybe as we're aware of it, we're more knowledgeable, and maybe that's what's dangerous. Maybe that's the big difference from our time to now, is that we have boatloads of information in our pockets at any given second. At any given second, we're overloaded with information. And you're in the news business, Mark. You know that the news, if it bleeds, it leads. That's the story they want to tell. So if you have kids or whatever, and you're reading that or hearing that on a daily basis, it just makes you more paranoid. But our parents, you know, I guess, you know, they saw the news at 6 and 11. If nothing happened before 6, it wasn't going to make no adjustments till the next day, you know. Right. I mean, when that thing in Atlanta happened, when they had the serial killer down there killing the black boys, then that was the first time it ever became an issue. But even then, it was like, well, that ain't here. That's down in Atlanta, so don't worry about it.
Because I think I was about 18, maybe 18, 19 when that was going on. So we were like going into menhood, you know, so right. they ain't worried too much about that happening here. But I was down there when that happened. They were kidnapping the kids and stuff.
Wow.
And that was a scary, scary sight down there, you know.
But I don't remember somebody saying, in a van, come get some candy. I don't remember none of this when I'm a little kid growing up, going across the street. I just don't remember that.
Well, Dirk, there was a time when we was coming from Aunt Betty's house by PS46. And remember the guy said, you want to sniff this glue? And he had the bag, and we ran.
No, I don't remember that, Keith.
I remember that. Guy said,
it was just you and me?
It was me and you. And I think Alan was with us. And he was like, come sniff this bag here. And we ran. He was sitting right by the gate there with the bench. And we ran through over to by Claremont and ran up to Myrtle Avenue.
Nah, I don't remember.
Well, that's another one of the things that I think that is definitely true of Generation Jones and Generation X. And that is, kids did, as I said, we were wild animals and we traveled in packs. We didn't, you know, we weren't really, generally speaking, we did not travel alone. So we always traveled in packs, which, you know, kind of, you know, what do they say about the wolf? You know, the strength of the wolf is the pack, the strength of the pack is the wolf. So we always traveled in groups.
Coming from school,
and maybe that was the difference, you know, that saved us. I remember one time, you know, going to the junior high school 166. It was like Christmas break, and there was a gang in the time in New York City. You know, if anybody's ever watched the movie The Warriors, that was true of New York City in the mid late 70s. It was gang infested. It was gangs everywhere. There was territories everywhere, and this particular gang that occupied that section of New York was a group called the Tomahawks, and they literally chased us like we was the Warriors all across Brooklyn trying to get home. I mean, we literally ran. I was running all through, you know, and then as you're running from these people, you're running through other people's territories, like Essex Boys and all these other guys. So, yeah, that was a thing. Or you'd hear about somebody that got jumped by some gang in different parts. Every part of Brooklyn had gangs affiliated with that section of Brooklyn. So that was different. But I mean, generally speaking, these kids are more loners because they spend their time on their phones, on social media, or on their computers. And so their contacts are always electronic as opposed to in person. So they spend their time alone, which is probably why they're more vulnerable versus, as you said, Keith, you're traveling with your brother and who's, you know, a couple of years younger than you, but then you're traveling with another comrade who's in your age group. So there's at least three of you around the same age, you know, whatever that age is, there's three of you that are kind of looking out for the other.
Yeah, that is true. Because I'm thinking now when we were growing up, we always was in a group. Either was five or better, always walking together, talking, playing, you know, being what kids supposed to be, and never thought about, like Dirk said, being kidnapped or someone's trying to molest one of us or anything. That was never a thought. We just out there having fun. Like you said, we lived the life of free. We didn't have no cares. We just did as we please.
Yeah, well, that's not what it is. So now you know. Now next time somebody calls you a boomer, you have to correct them. Say,
no, I'm a Jones.
I'm a Jones.
I'm a Jones.
Okay.
I'm straight up Jones.
Well, yeah. Before we go on, Anthony, I have to ask you a question.
Yes.
Are you trying to go bald like us, or there was an accident with the clippers or something on your head?
All right, so here's the deal.
I didn't want to say nothing.
Here's the deal.
Mark ain't want to say nothing. He was like,
During the pandemic, I had been going to the barber prior to the pandemic. You know, I'm paying barber money and everything else. And then after the when the pandemic hit, couldn't go to the barber. And I was afraid to go even when they said, well, you know, we're going to reopen the barber shops or whatever. I'm not going. So started shaving my head. And then in the process of shaving my head, because like everybody during the pandemic, you just learn how to do things, you know, YouTube and everything. Everybody was, you know, social media was the way to escape. So I started watching these barber videos. And so I learned. So I started giving myself I've been cutting my own hair for the last however many years. So I let it grow out and I was cutting it. But then I reached a point where my ability to cut my own hair and the length of my hair were not compatible. Mm. I had reached my hair cutting technique.
Okay.
And so last week I'm cutting my hair and I'm trying to get it right now. I was most of it was looking good. And I said, I'm just about where I want it to be. And then there was one part that's in the back of my head that I really couldn't see with the mirrors and where I was holding the mirrors. And like, you know, when you're cutting your own hair, you don't have an extra set of hands to hold a scissor and snip this and snip that and cut this and cut that. And so as I was trying to adjust, I cut a hole in it by accident. So.
You cut a hole in it by accident.
Because I was fading it. I had a nice, looking good. Y'all saw it, I'm looking good. And then the back, like I said, back here where I can't really see it. I can see the front, see the sides, but you can't really see that corner. Mm-hmm. I don't care how you turn, and it's hard to use a clipper facing backwards. And that's what happened. So I got a spot that was too close, and then there was a hole, and so I had to make a decision. Do I live with the hole and wait for it to go back in a couple of weeks? Or do I just start the process all over?
Start the process all over, man.
So I'm starting the process all over.
You can't walk around with a hole in your head, man.
Okay, because I thought you was, coming back home, joining the ball club,
I mean, listen, it's nice to visit. It's like a vacation. I ain't trying to live permanent there. Residents.
We are permanent residents. We got cards.
I'm not trying to live there. Yeah, yeah. Y'all got
roots in the statues. Communities.
I got roots in the community. I got roots, so I'm gonna keep it. So, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, I reached my hair cutting ability limits.
Gotcha. All right. But you can always come back now. You can be just like this, and you ain't got to worry about anything.
That's true. I mean, but it's funny because it's believe it or not, I have to cut my hair more now with it shaved than I do when it's growing out because every week, every day, it's
harder to be bald than to have a little hair because when I had hair, it was, you get up, you brush your hair, you're done. And at a certain point, it gets too long, in which case you got to get a haircut. But when you're bald, at least for me, I shave it every day.
Every day.
Me too. That's two of us.
So you would think, oh, you're bald, easy to get right. No. every day. Gotta hit those. Gotta hit the razor
every day. Yeah.
Like this week,
I'm on come back.
Yeah. You know? Otherwise, yeah. So this week, I'm like, I'm on vacation this week, so I was like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna not be as diligent because where am I going? But in a normal week, it's like, man,
every day.
You can't ever just pop up and run out. No, if you plan on seeing people or doing something, you always got like, man, here we go.
So what do y'all use? Do you use like actual razor?
I use an actual razor.
I use clippers.
I use T-liner too.
T-liner?
Yes.
Okay. I use clippers.
T-liner key?
Yes.
Okay.
I used to have
why you use a razor, Mark?
I want it super smooth. So like the clippers don't get as close as I want it to be.
T-liner does though. T-liner literally, damn it, extracts bone marrow. If you
I took one of those skull shavers, like the multiple,
like the Reco,
the one that just came out.
Yeah, like
you put it on your hand, you go around.
Yeah, I tried one of those. Didn't work as well because my neurosis when I shave my head, if I feel like any stubble, I think okay, no, it's not right where I want it to be. So it's funny though, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. It didn't work well in my head when I was cutting Dad's head towards the end. It worked great. It was exactly the way they advertise it.
It's electric or the hand one?
It's an electric one. It has like five floating heads.
Right.
And it's funny because the guy at work, he asked me something. He's like, yeah, my boys got me got one of these skull shavers or whatever the brand was.
I've seen them, yeah.
He said, it worked great. I said, it didn't work for me. So, but I see all the time in advertising, I know my phone's listening, but I see all the time in advertising, these new ones or this one, I always think, you know, maybe I'll try it again. But so far, I'm just doing the old-fashioned razor.
Yeah, I mean, just in case Skull Shaver or whoever makes these products is looking for somebody to sponsor to get, you know, obviously we have three people.
You get at least three of us on there.
Hey, Mark, do you dry shave or you put cream on your head?
No, here's the process. Every other day, it's shaving cream. And then the days I don't use shaving cream, I just wet my hair and do like the quick cut.
Yeah,
but I don't dry it. Dry out, boy, that'd be a disaster.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna stick with my T-liners. They do a good job.
Now, if T-liners listen, and y'all want to, you know, somebody that you certainly want to, you know, send us some products so we can demonstrate it, you know, for our listeners. Certainly, hit us up. Let us know. Speaking of shaved heads, want to take this moment to say rest in peace to the late, great, Oscar-winning Louis Gossett Jr.
Mayonnaise.
If you've watched movies in the last, since if you're Generation Jones, then you're certainly familiar with his work, whether it be Roots or Officer and a Gentleman.
I forgot about Roots, damn.
Yeah, Officer and a Gentleman. You've seen him in pretty much everything. He won an Oscar for Officer and a Gentleman. It's still one of my favorite characters in film.
He was terrifying in that movie.
Huh?
He was great and terrifying. Not that I ever had a desire to join the Army, but he was one of those people that he was the advertisement for not joining, because that guy's like, I don't want to have anybody like that on my ass. For how long? So if they were trying to recruit, that's not the film you show.
So again, you put in work. Peace and thank you for your art. Thank you for enriching our lives through your art for the last 80 some odd years, man. I hope you are you well deserved rest and thank you for that. I sent you guys an article. I don't even know how to make this transition. I sent you guys an article about a wedding, a recent wedding. And it is a wedding of this young woman, Abby Hensel, who is now married to an Army veteran. I don't know his name, but Abby Hensel is a co-joined twin. Now, people say, you know, I mean, we don't use the term Siamese twin anymore, it's racist, but co-joined twin, meaning that
we don't use that term. Okay, you know that.
No, Siamese twin is, you don't use it. It was based on the Chang and Ang Guinness Book of World Records.
I just learned something.
They are co-joined twins, meaning that their bodies
are. Can't call them freaks anymore either. We're not allowed to do that.
What?
You can't call them freaks anymore. We're not allowed to do that.
Nah, you probably shouldn't do
that. I shouldn't say that. They're,
okay.
Strike that from the record. Can't call them circus acts. You can't do that anymore.
You can't call them sideshow people. No, you can't do that anymore.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow,
ignore me on my terms.
You told me the Jones people because we said whatever we wanted to say back in the day.
Yeah, I guess yeah, yes, that's true. I mean, yeah, you know, again, yeah, we weren't concerned with pronouns and proper language, but you know, you have to evolve. So I'm evolved. So I'm just saying, co-joined twin, Abby Hensel married her fiance. Now, I say co-joined twin, Abby Hensel, A-B-B-Y-H-E-N-S-E-L, just in case you want to Google it for our listeners, so that you could see, because certainly when you see the picture, for me, there's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Because it's one body, two heads, married to one dude, meaning that one of the heads clearly fell in love with this particular guy that she married. And the other head just had to go along with it. know? Wait a minute. Which means that when they're, you know, on their wedding night, when they're intimate.
Oh, boy.
You know, one head has just got to sit there and just deal with the noise.
Oh.
Not being able to sleep, you know, while the other head is getting a freak on.
But only able to put in one earbud. Drop the
noise. Isn't the body can... The body, they're sharing the same body, if I'm correct.
They're sharing the same body.
So shouldn't they get the same feeling?
What if one, now that's a good question. What if one of them really wants it and the other one doesn't want it? Mm-hmm. What if the other one is lesbian?
What if the other one has a headache? So one has a headache that night, the other head doesn't have a headache.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there's more questions than there are answers
with this. I mean, I'm glad, you know what, first of all, let me just say this. It is hard for anybody to find anybody. You're lucky if you find somebody that likes you and is willing to put up with you. Mm. I hope that that's the case in this case. I'm hoping that the sister-in-law loves the brother-in-law as much as her sister does.
Wait a minute. But he married both of them. But isn't that illegal to marry?
He's in Utah.
That's a good question. did he marry both of them? Because they're not saying co-joined twins, Abby and so-and-so. They're saying Abby. She chose him.
So
the other one might have said no, but I like this dude.
Like, what, we ain't doing this?
I want to see the wedding picture. Did both of them have veils on or just the other one? You know,
one was the bridesmaid.
I'm going to pick it right now. And wow.
That's crazy.
I'm looking at the picture right. That is
now,
something else.
What if the other twin, finds somebody she loves? Would that be cheating?
That is
when the other twin gets her freak on. You know, I mean, how do the dudes work that out? How do they feel about how, you know? Like, do they sleep on opposite sides of each other?
No, that is crazy. When you start really
that's
going,
literally
into
a sister
it,
wife.
You know, yeah,
as you dig deeper into this hole we just created, there's more questions than answers or anything else.
There's nothing but questions. I just don't understand.
The whole damn thing is one question. Are you kidding me?
I'm guessing that they share a cycle. They have the same cycle, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it's only one of the... There's only one part down there, I believe.
Right, yeah, but like, you know, maybe one is not really in a bad mood, but one really is. You never know, give or take, you know, like who cycles it.
No. I ain't doing it tonight. No, okay. Yes, I am. My husband want me tonight.
All right. I'm looking at this picture here. Boy, I'm going to be in trouble. Look at this picture of the married couple. And there's two people.
Come on over.
Also
go
in
ahead.
The picture. There's a guy who I don't know who the hell that is. And there's a lady. They're on the outside of this picture. The couple, married couple, they look happy. The three heads look happy. Those two people on the end look like, what the F is going on? So
I gotta be a witness to this.
Yeah, okay. I'm co-signing, but this is not what I had in mind. All the women out there, you find two in one? What is this, a special?
Yeah, I'm saying. I mean, I'm trying to understand. I mean, you know, this guy is an Army veteran, so I'm imagining that he's traveled, he's seen the world. You know, I mean, like, what
you
is
see more in the world right now?
What's the allure? What makes you think, you know, I'm gonna go over across the dance floor and ask her to dance? And how do you choose once you get to the other side? You ask one head goes, oh, hell yeah, let's go. And the other was like, nah, not me. And then you say, I like this one better.
You know? But they can't separate because they're together.
Yeah.
So if they having a fight among one another, that's not a good situation.
Mm. Of course not.
You got two mouths cussing you out. I was rough with one mouth. God damn.
It's an amazing thing. Everybody's got their own kink. Everybody's got their own, you know, thing that turns them on. I'm just trying. I don't understand. And I'm not saying that these people don't deserve love, mm-hmm. but they are sharing the same body. Yeah. It's not like it's, you know, like, I mean, because like Chang and Aang, the ones that kind of were the people that coined the term Siamese twins were actually two physical bodies that never actually separated because they, you know, they were literally attached at their hip, you know, and that's what happens. The egg doesn't split all the way. But in this case here, these young women are sharing organs. They're literally sharing the same body parts, you know. I mean, I don't even know how that works. I mean, what if, you know,
yeah, because you think about what happens.
One is lactose intolerant and the other one loves milkshakes. What do you do?
Yeah. Like you say, one gets sick or does the whole body get sick? Or
the just whole body the head gets the whole sick, body. I guess, yeah. I mean, I don't know if one can have a head cold. Mm-mm. So I don't know. Yeah, she was dancing and the sister, yes, as long as it's called, is a dicephalic Paparegus co-joined twin. That's what our crack research team is aside. Brittany Hansel is the other sister.
She was happy.
Her husband, Josh Bowling, is the guy's name, Bowling.
So the other sister just was going along for the ride.
I guess so. Josh Bowling is an interesting name, especially since he's trying to do the 7-10 split on this one.
you know, he can double head, you know, just in case. You know,
I guess. I don't know. I mean, and, you know, and then what if the other one is asleep and he's freaky, and the other one is about it. Is he cheating?
Oh,
his wife?
Oh,
no, crazy.
No, that's.
I don't know. I mean, these are questions. I have questions. I have no answers. I have all these questions. I have no answers. I guess somebody. I mean, I'm gonna have to join and follow their social media page because I need to know what's going on. I need to hear how this is working out. You know, if they're having arguments, like, you know, one is saying, well, you know, he don't treat you right. You need to find, you know, drop that zero, get yourself a hero, find somebody that's gonna love you. You need to be loved. You know, and he's right there. You know, I mean, he's right there listening to this nonsense, you know. Or if he comes by and he kisses her, and every time he kisses her, the other one is like sucking her teeth.
Oh, that's probably problem.
I don't even know how this works, man. I really, you know, it struck me so strange, and I'm still.
I got one question for you, Anthony. What happened if they decide to have a baby?
First of all, I don't even know.
I would assume, but I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what parts are intact. I don't know whether you know they have a functioning womb. Yeah. I don't know.
Because one can say, the other one can say, I really don't want to carry this your child. You know, I'm upset. I don't want to do this.
What if the other one wants to be a nun? It's like, yeah, I want to give myself to Jesus. I want to be a nun. I want to stay a virgin. Hold on now. What you saying?
Nah, it's not a sight you want to see. Yeah.
That ain't good.
I don't know. Again, it's an interesting concept. It's you know, congratulations to the bride and her family. I hope it all works out. Happily ever after, the whole nine yards. But I'm really curious. What if some other guy sees Brittany and thinks, "Wow, that's the hot one." And you know, you let her get away. You know, she's the hot one. I want to be with Brittany. And when he starts talking to Brittany, you know, and that means that the other one has to go out on these dates, whether she wants to go or not.
That's it.
That's a fact.
Right.
That's crazy.
Then she got to drag her husband along, so they don't have no time to be quiet, you know, and say what they want to say. He got to be privy to all the conversations.
Okay. But this is now, like you said, they share one body, and she got a new friend. Maybe he want to get freaky.
He gonna want to.
So what does the husband say?
Look, somebody in there is getting up off that thing. Either you or him. Make a decision, player. All right. was, you know, she done ate my lobster and shrimp. Then you take your clothes off. But somebody, or give me my money back. You know the cheddar cheese biscuit rule, please. Man. She should have ate them biscuits on the other side. You know, yo, but somebody got to get up off that thing, man. That is crazy. Oh my God, man.
Yeah, I when I saw it, I didn't even know how to react. And I said, well, maybe, you know, this is obviously something to talk. Because I
didn't hear about that.
By all stretches of the imagination, I'm lost in the procedural. I don't, you know, I can get the idea that you can fall in love with somebody. I can get the idea that you fall in love with a personality. I can get the idea that you can find this person attractive. You know, if you put an eye patch on and you find one person more attractive than the other, I get all that. But,
that's
the procedural,
crazy.
The how, you know, there's that's no crazy. Manual for that. I mean, what is the manual?
You know. What if they want to take a shower together? You know, you coming up, you take a shower with your wife. What do you got to tell your sister? You need to close your eyes. Don't look at my husband. What kind of nonsense is that, man?
Wow.
Before you get to the shower, that's probably already been worked out. You know, I mean, I guess somebody got a nice set of Beats headphones and a mask and a blindfold so that they don't see what's going on when it's time to do what they do. Or you put like they have like the bird cage, you put the thing over the parakeet cage. You know, it's like, listen,
you overstepped that thing over the head. This is Eddie Kay speaking now, supervisor. You're overstepping your boundaries just a little bit. A bird cage with a come on, man.
I'm just saying, I don't know what you do. I don't know how you do that. I don't even know how that's it's hard to do when you're in college and you got a roommate. You're like, hey, listen, you know, you got to step out. I mean, oh, okay. But that roommate can't leave because you're attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no sock on the door that's going to get that taken care of. I'm sorry. That's just not working.
It might have performance issues, anxiety. She's your sister's watching. Damn.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't
that's
know.
Crazy. Oh, God.
Anyway, good luck to both of them. Good luck to, speaking of ladies that need luck, good luck to the Iowa and the LSU lady teams
rematch,
tonight as
yeah.
they go. It is the rematch from last year's finals. It's, you know, I have said it that I'm not necessarily a big fan of women's basketball. However, having said that, I have become a big fan of college women's basketball. I mean, you won't get me watching a WNBA game. I'm sorry. I'm just not doing it. But I am caught up. I think I mentioned this last week. I'm caught up by the pageantry, by the rivalry, sure. by the story that this game is tonight with Caitlin Clark and what's her face?
Angel Reese
from, you know, from LSU. You know, because last year there was so much drama and controversy from the "you can't see me" pose and everything else, and the way it was kind of racialized.
Angel was doing the ring at the end of the game. You know, we getting the rock. Yeah, it's going
to
be nice.
It was very racialized last year. You know, the almost the Larry Bird Magic Johnson type deal, where this one person is so superior that they're able to drag a team that doesn't really have the level of blue chippers versus Angel Reese, who has, you know, a team of people around.
Yes,
I guess I was watching Stephen A. today, as Mark likes to call him, Screaming A. And I was watching him today, and they were talking about whether or not Caitlin Clark is the GOAT. So I'll go around the room here and just said, do you think, in terms of women's basketball, is she the GOAT, Keith?
At this particular time, I say she is. She's the all-time leading scorer. She has basically put this team on her back. And when they need baskets or play, this young lady has proven time and time again she has made this happen. So I don't see, only one I see coming up is the young lady from USC. If she stays in college. But right now, Caitlin, she's the girl. You know,
She's the greatest women's basketball player of all time. She's not the
greatest woman ever played.
Okay, that's the question.
Okay, yeah. No, she's not the greatest. At this time in her stage, on this stage, she is definitely top, but not the greatest of all time.
Mark?
I haven't watched enough women's basketball to be able to have a true, catalog. I mean, you got Cheryl Miller, you got Cheryl Swoops, Candace Parkin, and Taurasi.
Sue Bird.
What's the coach of she was a coach, all the UConn girls. You're picking like a ton of UConn girls, so it's tough for me to say she's the GOAT, the greatest
Lobo and those type of people,
The greatest female basketball player of all time.
Dawn Staley.
Forgive it, I can't answer that question. I just know that she's really good. I mean, she is, that's a great analogy. She is doing what Bird did with his Sycamores.
Taking a
bunch of guys who don't belong on the court and elevating them to higher levels. So that's makes her game even more. And she plays a style that's kind of fun to watch. And she has attitude, which is fun. She complains a little bit too much. She got a lot of Luka in her. I mean, everything's a complaint. But she's highly skilled. But I don't know enough of women's basketball, but from what I do know, I don't think she's the GOAT, and I don't know who I would say is the GOAT of women's basketball.
Okay. Fair point. Derek?
I would go with Cheryl Miller.
Okay.
I'm going with Cheryl.
Why Cheryl? Why specifically Cheryl?
That's a bad lady, boy.
Cheryl just did everything very, very good. And it was a toss-up between her, Cheryl Miller, and I always like Cheryl Swoops. But I just thought if Cheryl Miller would have had the same stage as Swoops and Tina Thompson and Coop and them, she would have been that girl. But she was a beast, man. When I saw her at USC, I'm like, oh my God. Now, my crush, if you want to talk about crushes when it comes to the college woman game, has always been Tina Thompson. If you listen, Tina, you in your 50s now. I know you ain't balling no more. If you want to, have a cup of coffee, I'm available. Tina Thompson has always been my crush with them lips. Oh, man, yeah.
Bright red lipstick.
Yes, with the bright red lipstick. She might be a little taller than me, but I got a step still. I can say something to you. Cheryl has always been my girl, man. I mean, I watched her. I'm like, and then, and when I heard Reggie say she used to beat him,
I got a great Reggie story about that. He's somebody I think in high school, and they pick him up from, after a game, because, parents had to go because they're close in age. So they pick him up, and Reggie's, chirping and feeling pretty good about himself because in that game, he scored like 70 points. So he's in the back seat, and he said, and Cheryl and his pops in the front seat, and they're kind of chuckling and laughing. Like, he's thinking, what the hell, man? I scored 70. What's all the giggling? Like, yeah, that's pretty nice, Reggie. You had a good game. So he's like, okay, fine. So how'd you do, Cheryl? What'd you do? She scored 100. The man scored 70, has a great game, and he is 30 points away from his sister.
Cheryl.
He's like,
to put a bow on this, I Caitlin Clark is her right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's hurt right now, but when you say all time great, and I'm not a big enough women's basketball aficionado, but there are women. What's her face? That you can go back through the years and name that were just incredibly dominant as well. I think Cheryl Miller to me, just because of the body of work you have.
Yeah.
NCAA titles, you have Olympic titles, you have Player of the Year, Player of the Year
college sure.
awards that you've won.
Yeah, she's
you have a Hall of Fame brother whose ass you used to beat on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to not put her in that space. I forget the woman's name. There's a coach used to play ball. Becky Hammon, all these types of
things. That's the thing I couldn't recall before. She coached with the Spurs. Yeah, she was a ball.
You mentioned Swoops. We haven't mentioned Lisa Leslie. I'm just saying in terms of when you talk about the level of accomplishment. It is hard to find a resume better than Cheryl Miller's. If she wins tonight, if she wins a chip, she will go down and certainly cement her record. But I'm not even sure if there was, when Cheryl Miller played, I guess there was a college three-pointer for women's basketball.
I don't think she did.
I don't think they had it for her.
Yeah, that so came in then, late.
So right. That means so that puts a little shade on the scoring title.
Sure.
So now all of a sudden you're talking about somebody who's not allowed to shoot a three-pointer. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, okay. In a game where everybody's shooting a three, where the three has become, you know, the layup or the dunk, it's a weapon now. Everybody uses it. That's why that's the same argument I have, you know, when people talk about, you know, Steph Curry being the greatest shooter. He is indeed one of the greatest shooters I've ever seen. But I want to know if the three-pointer was something you could just do and shoot with impunity and not have to worry about defense.
Right.
In the 80s when Larry Bird played, what would it look like? What would Larry Bird, if given a green light to do nothing but rehearse and practice and shoot threes, mm-hmm. what would that look like? What would his numbers look like?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's curious. I mean, I just wanted to bring that up. There's a couple more points I want to get to.
There's one lady who we forgot about, the Nancy Lieberman.
That's why I was trying to, I couldn't remember Nancy.
I think she tried out for the Bucks or something like that. There wasn't a woman's team. That's the lady.
Lady is a legendary lady, and I couldn't think of the damn name.
Nancy Lieberman.
Nancy Lieberman. There you go. Thank you. Exactly right. And I was saying, I mean, how do you say, okay, Becky Hammon put her, Caitlin Clark, how do you put her over?
You can't.
That pantheon of names that we've just been tossing out there. These are the people we know. There's people who are playing in the game today that are not getting the same shine because Caitlin Clark is absorbing all the light from all the stories that are being told about.
I mean, those are two,
you know, legendary ballers.
Ridiculous.
So again, those people, you know, yes, good for Caitlin Clark, and I'll give her a pound, and I celebrate you, and we salute you. But I can't put her as the GOAT no matter what happens tonight or in the finals. Did y'all hear about Rashee Rice, the Kansas City wide receiver? Rashee Rice, who's Kansas City's at the time, he's there currently their number one receiver. He might be on his way out. Apparently over the weekend in Dallas, he was racing in his Corvette against a Lamborghini, high-speed race, late at night, both men lost control of their cars.
Damn.
And I'm not saying they're saying it, that the car is owned by him. Let me rephrase. The car is owned by him. He is a person of interest. It is believed that he was racing. Well, no, the racing is not disputed. They're not sure who was behind the wheel, but he lawyered up. So, and in Texas, if you're racing or if you cause an accident as a result of racing, it's big time criminal charges in Texas. And so that's why he's getting lawyered up. But that's what it was. He was the two men lost control of the cars, caused a six car accident, including their two cars. And so he is Kansas, you know, he's literally coming up. This guy is coming off of a Super Bowl title in his rookie year, on a team that is poised and locked and reloaded to try to do it again. He is their number one receiver, and suddenly Kansas City may have to decide that in this upcoming April draft, they're looking for a wide receiver because, you know, he might not be available.
I don't understand this, Anthony. You have, you know, they have all these fast cars and stuff. If you want to drive it and you're making all this money, there's a place called the Autobahn. If you want to drive like that, you go over there. But in the streets, in any city, and you're going over 120 miles an hour, you know there's going to be a person driving slow in the fast lane. And if you ain't quick enough to dip out the way, or you're going to hit them, definitely. So why they do that, I don't understand the reason.
I said the same thing. I said this.
I'm saying we can't because we're 50 and then a bunch of 60-year-olds on this podcast, but a 20-something-year-old brain doesn't have that process. They just don't think that they're going to get caught or that they can't pull it off. That's the problem. It's logic doesn't apply to 20-something-year-olds, as we all can attest to.
Well, I was the same thing you mentioned, Keith, was I had the same thought. I said, you know what, when you're that famous and you have that level of money, you don't even have to go to Germany to drive your car fast. There are racetracks that will allow you to bring your own vehicle, or if you want to race, you know, you can use one of their vehicles and you can go and drive on a track as fast as you'd like in your car or in one of the cars they provide if you need that experience.
Right.
They've always said, you know, and this is something that coaches have always said, and it's just true. Nothing good for an athlete or celebrity happens after 12
a.m. Midnight, yeah.
Yeah.
After midnight, anything that's going to happen is not going to be in your favor after midnight if you're a famous person or an athlete. It's just not. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the story is going to be of wasted potential, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about wasted potential, because if this guy ends up in Texas and he's convicted, or if there's an issue and he ends up losing his gig, and Kansas City is going to be forced to cut him because there's no way they're going to have that in their situation. And remember, Tyreek Hill was, you know, not sent packing because of that, but don't think that for a moment that the stories coming out about him and the way he disciplined his kids was not something that the ownership and the management started looking at going, yo, this is a problem. Can we move on from him? This is going to be a problem, and they're going to end up moving on from him. Two more quick hits. Joel Embiid said he's coming back this week. Mark, how you feel?
Of course I'm excited. I hope it works out. I know he's not going to have much cardio. I just hope he's one of those guys that he's so highly skilled. He doesn't need a lot of games to get it going, but he's going to be sucking a lot of wins. So, yeah, I'm excited because he's just too good and he's too dominant that he can get on one of those runs, and they could run it through a chip if things, you know, fall right.
You think like this, if he comes back, they're going to be a much better team, but then you still risk of him might re-injuring that knee, that's maybe it's not really 100%. You can look at 100%. Knicks right now with OG. They came back and his arm, you know, they thought it was healthy. After three games in, he was back out. So sometimes you have to really weigh the option. Is he going to take us to the championship? Are we going to win the championship with him not being 100%?
He hasn't been 100% since he got in the league. So what difference?
Yeah, so I was about to say, I think with Joel Embiid, Joel Embiid is like a vintage Italian sports car.
Great analogy.
He is amazing to watch, amazing to operate when it's good. But you have to accept it's going to be in the shop a lot. It's going to require a ton of maintenance.
Accurate.
And you're not getting the reliability you get with a Honda when you have a Joel Embiid. You're only going to get the time you get with him, and he's 30 years old. He's not getting younger. He's getting older. And all of those issues that he has physically are going to keep happening. At some point, he's going to have to get on a serious weight loss regimen and get himself down.
That's his body. He's got one of those Stambouille bodies.
Right, yeah. I don't see how you – I mean, you play him, and, you know, and when he breaks, you just assume – you play him assuming he's going to break. Right. You know, you assume he's going to break. I don't know if we should even try to touch on this before we cut out, but some more information is coming out about Puffy. Should we just wait till next week?
There'll be more stuff coming tomorrow.
I just think there's going to be more because, you know, it's – this story, I think I said it off the air, but I'll say it on the air. When we watched Escape, or was it the R. Kelly documentary? Surviving R. Kelly. When we first saw the documentary, I mean, we knew these stories. You'd have been hearing these stories. You heard, you know, Dave Chappelle made a joke about him peeing on the 14-year-old girl, pissed on you, the video. It's hilarious. We laughed. Ah, ha, ha. And when we saw him dating Aaliyah. We thought, wow, that's odd, you know, date this young girl like that. But, oh, okay, whatever. I mean, you know, when he was hanging out in the McDonald's parking lot near the high school, you're like, eh, you know, maybe he likes Big Macs. Who am I to judge? So just like in the Surviving R. Kelly video, it's not the video. It's not what you started to learn. It's the drip, drip, drip of this whole situation that's got Puffy. We've been in and around these stories. We've kind of known some of these stories, and people have been saying these things and whispering these things for a while. But now it's the drip, 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 and the names that are being dropped, TD Jakes, the names that are being dropped, all over Cuba Gooden, that have been dropped all over the place. Are going to start to be problematic, Meek Mill. They're going to be real problematic for him. And I'm sure some of these dudes that are wrapped up, Usher, in this situation are going to have to do what they have to do, Justin Bieber, to figure out how to survive his downfall. Because his downfall is coming.
Yeah.
It's just coming. Mm. So that's where we'll leave it. And I know Keith wanted to talk about X-Men 97, hottest cartoon that I've seen in a long time.
Definitely.
I didn't know how they were going to remake a show that, you know, was almost 20 years ago, but they've done a great job, and it's probably some of Disney's best, ironically, some of their best Marvel work with this goofy cartoon that they're doing, the stories they're telling and the way they're retelling them and making something that was over, you know, as I said, 97, I don't know how many years ago, was that 30 years ago. Yeah. They're making that actually feeling fresh and new, which is hard to do, to take a cartoon and slightly tweak the animation so that it seems fresh and new, and slightly tweak the stories so that the stories seem fresh and new, and the characters so that they seem fresh and new, even though they're using the same voice talent. It is really, really amazing. So if you get a chance to check it out, again, we're endorsing that. In case you're listening, Disney, you know, and you need somebody else to sponsor, give us a shot. Because, you know, Puffy and all those other people I mentioned, they're about to go down, so you don't want to mess around. And Chirac, I mean, I'm not a big vodka drinker, but damn it, y'all going to need a new pitch, man. just putting it out there, just in case you listen, putting it out there in the universe. Listen, if you have not subscribed to Power to the People, make sure you do. Anywhere you get your podcast, you can get us. Anywhere you listen, you can find us. You can ask Alexa to play Powell to the People if you're too lazy to actually just type in P-O-W-E-L-L to the people. You can find us on social media at Powell to the People on Facebook. Some people listen there. I noticed that. You can also find us on X at Powell to the Peeps, P-O-W-E-L-L, the number 2, the letters D-A-P-E-E-P-S, Powell to the Peeps on X. You can find us all on Instagram. And you'll find us back here, same bat time, same bat channel. See you then.
Peace.